Hey everybody, it's Mike. Welcome or welcome back to the Revision Church Podcast. While you're here, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Revision app, which is actually the best way to get access to new content and share it with friends. You can get the app by texting Revision app to 77977. Thanks for listening today. My hope is that this message will be helpful for you and would inspire you to take the next step on your faith journey.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors at Revision. I'm excited to be here today. I'm still excited about last week. It ended up being a great day. We had great weather for our ag hunt, some fun services. In both of our services, people decided to say yes to Jesus and give their lives and futures to Him. So, yeah, that's worth celebrating. It does not get better than that. And as Michelle said, today we're kicking off a brand new series called The Elephant in the Family Room. Because even though family is an incredible gift from God, it's challenging. Marriage and parenting and being a sibling and working with technology and existing in the middle of a wild culture all present different challenges. And if you're anything like me, you sometimes hope those challenges will just go away because dealing with them requires awkward conversations that you kind of don't want to have. And so you just passively wait for them to disappear and they never disappear. And so what we're going to do this month is have some of those conversations. And I'm excited about it. I'm excited just on a personal level to start stepping into the future God says He has for me by being more intentional about some of the conversations that are easy to avoid. I don't want to kick off the elephant series this morning by talking about a time when I felt like an entire herd of elephants were running through my body. A couple years ago, I was hanging out with some pastor buddies from around the city of Des Moines. I'm a friend, Cornelius, who pastors a church mostly of Liberian immigrants on the east side, brought this traditional Liberian dish. This is some chicken and cassava root, and it was delicious. It had a real kick to it. So I went up to get seconds, and I saw a pepper in the bowl. And I love spicy food, so I just scooped that pepper in along with everything else. I sat down, started eating it, got to the end, and crunched that pepper. And immediately, my mouth was burning. But I didn't want to be a wimp. I didn't want to get made fun of, and I didn't want to insult Cornelius. I don't want to be like, Mike hates my food. So I just finished that bad boy. And a couple seconds later, he looked over and saw the stem and said, Mike, did you eat that pepper? And I said, yeah. And he said, oh, brother, that pepper is not for eating. Even we don't eat that pepper. White people should not eat that pepper. That's just for flavor. And I told him, thanks so much for telling me that 11 seconds ago, Cornelius, before it was too late. And like my face and my eyeballs and my neck felt like someone had lit them on fire. So I had to Google, and what in the world did I just eat? And it had this cute little innocuous sounding name, a Scotch bonnet pepper. Yeah, it looks precious, right? Until it's in you. And then you learn those can be 3.5 times hotter than a habanero, more than 100 times hotter than a jalapeno, and it's bigger, too. So like right then, I was like, okay, I'm going to die. And I could just picture it at the funeral, people walking by like, oh, what a tragedy to lose a life so young. How did he die again? Pepper. He tried to be cool. He ate a pepper, and he died. So I was just praying, like, God, please don't take me now. This is such a dumb way to die. Please don't take me now. And then one of the guys said, hey, I think we should go around the table and pray for each other now. I don't know how many times you guys have sat in a room full of pastors who are supposed to pray for each other, but that's usually not a short endeavor. And so my whole body is just screaming, no, but I didn't want to be the not spiritual guy. So just sat there, and it felt like the longest prayer circle of my entire life. And then I sped home on 2:35. I literally jumped into an ice bath, and I suffered for a few hours, but I survived. And the whole thing reminded me of the old adage, if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. But if you give a man a poison fish, he'll eat for the rest of his life. It's a true story. The Scotch bonnet wasn't poison, right? But it felt like it, and I know it wasn't good for me. And the situation was a great reminder of how easy it is in life sometimes to ingest things that aren't good for us. And I'm not just talking about food. We live in the middle of a culture where we are constantly bombarded with images, thoughts, words, and advertisements that are toxic to our souls. And let's be real, a whole lot of them are delivered straight into our brains via the screens that we are staring at for, on average in America, over 7 hours a day, which is just, you know, over a third of our waking lives. So what I'm going to do this morning is kick off this series by talking about technology and the way we use it, how to navigate it personally and as parents raising kids or as future parents who might want to raise kids someday. Because I think this is a topic we all know we need to think about more intentionally than we do, but we kind of just let it ride most of the time because we're not sure exactly how to deal with it. The technology that exists today simply did not exist when we were growing up, and so we don't have a roadmap for it, and that lack of a roadmap leads to a complete lack of intentionality and a lack of conversation. But the truth is, technology is here, and it is going nowhere, which means it's not a problem to be solved, it's a tension to be managed. And technology is not a bad thing. In fact, it equips us to do a lot of good things. It's morally neutral. Technology is not evil, it's just powerful. Which means we have to think intentionally about it if we're going to step into the lives Jesus says we were made for. We have to learn to limit it so that we can leverage it. You cannot leverage anything you will not limit. I mean, put simply, we got to learn to control technology or we're going to end up being controlled by it. And just for fun, just to see where we're all at on the controlled by technology scale, I want to give you a short 5-question quiz this morning. If you answer yes to any of these things, you get 1 point. Then we'll add them up at the end and just see where you're at. You ready? First one, if you go to the bathroom and forget your phone and you are emotionally disappointed by that, like if you sit down and you're like, oh, it's not, I'm going to be so bored, you get 1 point. One more for that. Number two, that's not a continuation of this. Talking about number two, this is just the second one, all right? Number two, if you sleep within arm's reach of your phone, you get 1 point. Bonus point, if you're a married couple and before bed every night, you stare at phone screens while sitting next to each other. If you are alone together right before you go to sleep every night, you get a bonus point. Number three, I'm sure this one never ever happens to anyone, but if you can text without looking, like say, hypothetically, you're sitting in class and your teacher is looking at you and under the desk, you can text your friend without even looking, you get a point. You get a point. Next one, if your phone is the first thing you touch in the morning, and not just like to turn off an alarm, but like if you're on your phone before you brush your teeth or take a shower or get coffee, if phoning is the first thing you're doing every day, you get a point. And then last, but certainly not least, all right? When you're on your phone or your computer or your tablet or you're watching TV and your husband or your wife or your kid or your brother or sister says, hey, can you come here real quick? I need you. If your most common response to, hey, I need you, come here, is, yeah, I'll be there in just a minute. If that's your most common response, you get a point. 2 points if you're usually so locked in, you don't even hear them ask. If you don't know, ask your wife. She'll tell you whether you're too locked in to hear her ask questions, all right? Add them up. Add them up. Where are you at? If you scored more than 2, I think today will be helpful for you. If you scored more than 4, consider this your intervention. And before you feel too bad, let me just have a moment of confession. I'm right there with you. Like, a lot of that stuff hits too close to home for me, and I have not quite figured out how to perfectly limit technology so I can leverage it in my life or in my kids' lives. But I am certain of one thing. Unlimited technology can be unbelievably toxic. And we know that. Even the guys who invented it know that. The iPhone was first introduced to the world at the Mac World Expo in 2007. It's 17 years ago. And 17 years later, the average American checks their phone more than once every 5 minutes. And we don't even know all the repercussions yet of what's coming down the line for us individually or as a society because we all have smartphones in our pockets. But we know it's going to be something. It's fascinating. When the iPad was introduced, a reporter asked Steve Jobs right afterwards whether his kids were excited to play on it. And Steve Jobs, the guy who invented the iPhone and the iPad, at an expo where he was trying to sell both of those devices to the American public, looked at that reporter and honestly said, "No, my kids will not be touching an iPad. We have very strict limits on what sort of technology they can use at home and how many minutes they get to spend on screens." That kind of makes you think twice about the technology you're using and the minutes you're spending on screens or your kids are spending on screens. In part because we know Steve Jobs was right. We know that technology has the power to negatively impact us in some significant ways. There's a recent study done of like tens of thousands of teenagers by researchers at the University of San Diego. And what they found was that teens these days are less happy measurably than they ever have been before. And phones are a significant contributing factor. They studied a whole bunch of different activities teens engage in and the effect that those activities had on their happiness. And they came to the conclusion, and I quote, "Nearly all phone activities are linked to less happiness, and nearly all non-phone activities are linked to more happiness." That's intense, right? Even listening to music is linked to unhappiness in teens these days, which is kind of shocking, even for my generation. I'm about to have like an old guy moment. I'm already up here with Band-Aids on my head because I'm middle-aged and bald and I have to go to the dermatologist now. So let me just like really lean into being old. Like back in my day. But for real, back in my day, we would get together and go to the mall and shop for CDs at Sam Goody and then put them on a boombox and listen together. Today, most teens listen to music in isolation, which makes it auditorily, psychologically, and sociologically lonely. It's something you do with AirPods in or noise-canceling headphones that makes you feel alone and communicates to the rest of the world, leave me alone. Almost all phone-based activities led to unhappiness. The activities that led to the most happiness, to the highest increases in the happiness of teens, going to church, volunteer work, playing sports, and hanging out with friends in person. I kid you not, this was a secular study, and that's the stuff they say adds the greatest value to teens, that and sleep, right? Which proves to us the stuff the Bible has been telling us for years on repeat. We need people and we need purpose. We need community and we need a mission worth chasing. And parents, our kids need us. A researcher named Andy Crouch recently asked a whole bunch of 13 to 21-year-olds, what is the one thing you wish your parents would do better? What's the one thing you wish your parents would change? And the number one answer by far, like by such a wide margin, I went to the appendix to check his research and make sure his math was correct. That's how much number one beat number two by in responses. You want to know it? I wish my parents would spend less time looking at their phones and more time talking to me. Like there are a lot of us out there that are spending a whole lot more time staring at a phone than we are talking to our kids. And our phones will tell us exactly how much if we have the guts to look. And we know it, but we're just not sure how to make the right changes because our phones are useful in some ways. And so we're like, well, I don't know if I should do anything with this at all. And we do nothing. And frankly, if we're honest, we do nothing because we like the dopamine hit we're getting from the stuff we're seeing and the things we're accomplishing on our phones. It's built to release a feel-good chemical in our minds, and it releases that chemical, and it makes us feel good. And so we just keep diving in. And the truth is, I could stand up here, and I could rattle off like alarming numbers and wild statistics all morning, but not one person sitting in this room is going to be shocked. We know it. We get it. We've seen the harmful effect that it's having on our lives and on our families, and we know something's got to give. And so the question I want to ask this morning is, what does the Bible have to say about the way we use technology? And maybe right now you're thinking, I bet it's not much. You just said the iPhone is 17 years old. The Bible's written thousands of years ago. What in the world could an ancient book have to say about how we use modern technology? A lot, I think. There are some foundational scriptural principles that can help us figure out the pathway for limiting and leveraging technology in a way that's healthy for our souls. Starting with Paul's advice in Philippians chapter 4. If you have a Bible or a Bible handy this morning, you can crack it open to the book of Philippians chapter 4. If you hit Galatians or Ephesians, keep going. If you hit Colossians or Thessalonians, go back. If you don't have a Bible, you can follow along with the words on the screen. And if you need a Bible, please take one from the Next Steps area before you leave today. They're free. They're a gift to you. We love it when they disappear. But in Philippians 4, verse 8, Paul's kind of closing his thoughts to the church at Philippi, and he said, "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever's true, whatever's noble, whatever's right, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things." Like intentionally bend your mind in the direction of these kinds of things. Let me ask you to do something. Think for a minute about the things you think about. Like in any given day, what are the top few thoughts that are most frequently rattling around in your mind? And when you got a few, let's take it a step deeper. What is it that makes you think about what you think about? Like what sorts of things trigger those sorts of thoughts in your mind? It's not a trick question, it's really easy. What you're looking at. What you're looking at shifts what you're thinking about. What you're thinking about changes who you become. The great philosopher Rene Descartes once wrote, "I think, therefore I am." And I'd argue that that's bad ontology and epistemology, but he was on the right track that our thinking and our being are intricately interwoven with one another. I love the way pastor and author Craig Groeschel says it, your life will move in the direction of your strongest thoughts. And I'd add that your life will move in the direction of your most frequent thoughts. Like who you are and who you become has a whole lot to do with the things that you're thinking about regularly. There's that old adage, you are what you eat. I'm not sure that's true, but I am sure you are what you think. Because our thoughts are never thought in isolation. They become our actions. What you think about determines what you do. Your actions determine your habits. Your habits determine your character, and your character determines your destiny. And if that feels heavy, it is. But you guys, too many of us are just drifting toward our destiny. And the results of that just aren't very impressive at this point in time. Over 1 in 5 Americans now have a diagnosable psychological disorder. Over 1 in 3 admit that they felt clinical depression symptoms within the last year. The top-selling drug in the United States of America is Abilify. It's an antidepressant. Anxiety is killing us. And let me be explicitly clear. I don't say that in any way, shape, or form to denigrate people who are taking or have taken Abilify or any other similar drug. Depression is real. Mental health is real. There are real chemicals in our brains and our bodies that get out of whack and need to be corrected sometimes. Like I've said this before, I'll say it again. God extends us grace daily through 3 main things: people, prayer, and pills. And some of us are here this morning by the grace of all 3. Thank God for being good to us. But there's no getting around the fact anymore that technology is having an adverse effect on our mental health. And you can argue till you're blue in the face that there's no like direct causation there. A lot of researchers will disagree with you, but there's undeniably a correlation. There's a correlation between technology and toxicity and turmoil. We know it. Which brings me back to Paul's words in Philippians 4:8. Whatever's true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, praiseworthy, think about these types of things. You know the context of that verse? You know what Paul was talking about when he gave that advice? Anxiety. It's smack dab in the middle of a section where Paul's talking about the anxiety we cannot help but feel in a sin-stained universe. Like right before it in verses 4-7, he says, hey, cast all your cares on God. I know you have fear. I know you have anxiety. I know you have worries. They're real. You're never going to be able to get rid of them completely. They're going to pop up in your brain, but when they come, roll them away to God, and he will give you a peace that's bigger and better than you could possibly imagine. And then right after this verse, in verse 9, he says, do this stuff, put it into practice, live like you saw me live, and the God of peace will be right there with you in the midst of your difficult life. And smack dab in the middle of those thoughts, he says, hey, these are the types of things you gotta fix your mind on. And what Paul's trying to tell us is, I know peace is hard to come by. I know comfort and a sense that things are okay and the knowledge that God is present with you and loves you are difficult to find in this shattered space in which you exist, but they are possible. God wants to hand you a peace that passes all understanding. But if you want to grab hold of it, you got to be intentional about thinking these kinds of thoughts, because your life will move in the direction of your strongest and most frequent thoughts. I call that the immersion inevitability. Right? It's the immersion inevitability. If you immerse your mind in thoughts that are true and beautiful and pure, you're inevitably going to feel peace in your soul. But if you're regularly staring at things that are untrue and impure, you're going to struggle. And so I challenge you to like think about the stuff in your life that's most frustrating to you right now, the places where you're struggling most deeply. What kind of thoughts are you feeding your brain? What kind of things are you looking at? Like if you're struggling with anger, if you're just always mad all the time at the world, how many minutes or hours a day are you spending on Twitter? And look, I'm not saying that like if you watch one violent movie, that's it, you're toast. Like one viewing of Braveheart and you're gonna start murdering people with a broadsword, like freedom, it's not how it works. We know that. But I do think that over time, all of us tend to drastically underestimate the influence the stuff we're consuming has on the way we think. For instance, I just learned this week that on average, before they turn 18, a kid will see 200,000 acts of violence on a screen. And every one of us this year will see more than 10,000 advertisements for food. Very few of them are going to be for green vegetables and grilled chicken. Most of them are like dudes with six-pack abs, pounding burgers and beers. I'm not saying in isolation any of that's going to kill you, but is it possible? Just bear with me. Is it possible that that reality in some way correlates to the epidemics of violence and heart disease in our society? Or like, the way social media gets us is even more insidious because it dials in these algorithms to show us exactly what we want to see again and again and again and again. And that may or may not be why there's 8 baseball hats and 5 home gadgets at my house that when Jenny opened the box and said, "What is this? Where did you find this?" I shamefully again answered, "Instagram." Instagram gets me, you guys. It is dialed in. It's just endless videos of people doing stupid things that hurt themselves, sports highlights, stand-up comics, hats, shoes, and dumb home inventions. Like, I'm in. I'm like, I gotta buy that. And don't judge me. I know I'm not the only one. Like, this stuff is just zeroed in on showing us what we want to see, and it's dangerous in many ways. It's like deep in our psychology, and we're not always conscious of how it's affecting us. You know what, watching TV, YouTube, TikTok, even small kids now see over 3 sexual situations per hour of screen time watched? The average age of first exposure to pornography in the United States of America is now 8. 8. I'm going to say that one more time. 8. And it's not a picture torn out of a magazine crumpled at the bottom of somebody's backpack on the back of a bus anymore. It's a high-definition video on a screen in someone's pocket. Think about the way that shapes how an 8-year-old sees the universe. Because I got to college and I joined a fraternity and I met a bunch of dudes who were convinced that you should just have sex with as many people as you possibly could before you got married because there's no consequences to it whatsoever. It's just a really fun time. You got to see who you're compatible with, so you should just go for it. Like that's what they truly believed because that's what they got taught in school? No. Because their parents sat them down and had that talk like, listen, there are no possible ramifications for sex. There's no consequences. Nothing could go wrong, son. Have at it. No. No. Because it's true? Hard no. Every bit of evidence we've ever had suggests that the Bible is right and sexuality expressed only within marriage is by far the better way. But these guys were convinced of that when they showed up at college. Why? Because they grew up watching Beverly Hills 90210 and Friends and Seinfeld and a whole bunch of Hollywood movies that sent a very powerful message. They were getting the picture from the picture they were getting fed. And all of us are. All of us are. Even those of us who want to sit here and be like, it doesn't affect me. Like, I know better. I can watch that stuff without it really changing the way that I think. My kids know better. They can watch that stuff without it really affecting the way that they behave. That's just like, that's not how it is for us. Like, I can look at the menu just as long as I don't order, right? I had someone actually say that to me recently, and I think he was looking for like the pastoral how far is too far line, but I had to be honest. Like, that's really dumb. I don't think that's how it works at all. It reminds me of this situation that happened almost exactly 5 years ago in my family. We had all this Easter candy at our house because Jenny was stuffing thousands of eggs for the revision Easter egg hunt, and I walked into the kitchen one day after I got home from work, and I found my twin 4-year-olds sitting on the floor with a bag of Hershey's Kisses between them. They're just sitting there looking at it. And I had to be like, no, guys, that candy's not for you. That's for the ad con, okay? And also, it's 3 o'clock. This is not time for chocolate. And two happy little blonde boys looked straight up at me and said, oh, Dad, we're not eating it. We're just looking. I don't even know if they believed that was true, but they said it like they believed it was true. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to set a timer for 2 minutes, leave the room, and see what happens. And you guys are going to be super surprised by this. But I walked in, and I found two little boys' faces and hands covered in chocolate, mouths stuffed with chocolate, chocolate all over my floor, because of course that's what I found. How long can you be just looking before it's not just looking? Like, how many of us could sit for 2 minutes with this bag open and not eat a chocolate? Probably not me. It's just how it works. And yet, all the time we consume media like it's not going to affect me. I could do it. It's not going to make a difference in my life. But it does. And it doesn't always, if I'm being truthful, help me think about things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, or praiseworthy. In Romans 12:2, Paul writes, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I think what he's doing here is giving us a binary. What he's letting us know is neutral is never an option, because some of us want to think, hey, I could become more like Jesus, I could become more like the world around me, or I could just stay right where I am. And Paul's like, nah, that doesn't work. There is no stay right where you are option. Formation is going to happen. Formation is always going to happen. Conformation or transformation. Con means with, trans means across. And what Paul's saying is there is no neutral. We are never sitting still. We are always either being conformed or transformed in relation to the world around us. We're being formed with it to look more like it, or across from it to look differently. And so I think the question all of us have to ask this morning is, who or what is forming you? Who or what is forming your kids? You can teach your kids about good and evil, right and wrong, but if you don't, screens will absolutely teach them about that for you. You can teach your kids how to understand sex and sexuality, but if you won't, social media will teach them for you. You can tell your kids how important it is to be content and happy, but if you don't, the internet will tell them they should be dissatisfied with their lives and entitled. You can look your kids in the eye and let them know you are fearfully and wonderfully made. You are knit together in your mother's womb on purpose by God. But if you don't tell them that, they'll find plenty of messages online that confuse that truth for them. We just can't sit passively by anymore and expect that the things we're looking at, particularly when they're making money off of showing us the images of this world, will not leave us conformed to the patterns of this world, even if we didn't intend for that to happen. And so the question is, like, what do we do with that? I don't know. Like, I really like it when I can stand up here and be like, hey, the Bible says do this. Like, you just take this exact, clear, concrete step from where you are to where you need to be. And I don't have one of those today, because I do think, like, technology is valuable in a lot of ways, but it's dangerous in a lot of other ways. And I don't know exactly how we need to limit it in order that we can leverage it. But I think there are a few truths we have to come to an agreement on. Number one, if we don't start controlling technology, it's going to control us more and more. And number two, we can't leverage anything we won't limit. And so we have to put limits around technology if we're going to leverage it for our good. And number three, our lives are going to move in the direction of our strongest and most frequent thoughts. And so if we're regularly consuming things that don't help us think things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, excellent, admirable, and praiseworthy, then we're going to be conformed rather than transformed, because formation is always happening. And so my challenge this week, my invitation is threefold. And I think maybe let's try it. Like, try these three steps and see if they don't add a little bit more peace to your life and your family in the middle of this frenetic world. Step one is this. Find 30 minutes this week, just 30 minutes, to have an honest conversation about your screen time. I know what some of you are thinking right now. You're like, oh, we're so busy this week. Oh, my God, this, no, not this week, Mike. This, oh, man. We're not going to be, where would we find 30 minutes? I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. If you come up to the stage after the service and you show me your screen time, and it's under 2 hours, I'll give you a pass. You can put the conversation off to next week. If it's 3 hours or more, and statistics say it is for the majority of people in this room, I bet you can find half an hour among the 20-plus that you're staring at your phone for this conversation. That's not even counting the shows that we stream. It's just like, it's hard, and our lives are busy, but this is a conversation that has to be had. If you have a family, make it a family discussion. If you're single, find a friend or two and have this discussion. Just be as gut-level honest as you can with the people around you about how you think your phone is affecting you, how social media, Instagram and YouTube and TikTok are affecting you, how video games are affecting you, how Hulu and Netflix and the movies you're watching are affecting you, how the stuff you're looking at on a computer screen is affecting you, and ask yourself the question, is this stuff helping me be transformed by the renewing of my mind? Is the stuff that I'm looking at conforming me to the patterns of this world or transforming me into someone who looks more like Jesus? Like, what is it doing in my soul? And then take it one step further and get real awkward with it and tell the people around you what you see technology doing in their lives. Sit with them and be like, this is how I think it's affecting you. And this is how your use of technology is affecting me. When I'm trying to talk to you and you're paying no attention, this is like what that does in my soul. That's an elephant in the family room conversation. It's not an easy one to have. It's not a comfortable one to have, but it's a necessary one to have, because if we don't start thinking intentionally about this, we're just going to keep drifting toward our destiny, and we're not going to end up in the place God has for us. So step one, have that conversation. Step two, set some limits. What limits? I don't know. I don't know what you're struggling with. I don't know what your kids are struggling with. It's different for all of us. What I do know is you're going to make some mistakes. Your kids are going to make mistakes. You're going to pick some limits and be like, that was a really dumb one. Why did we say we're going to do that? We're not doing that anymore. And you're going to break the rules, and everyone is. And I think there's a little bit of grace that needs to be extended here, because this is a guest check and revise situation. This is just kind of figuring it out as we go. But there has to be a line drawn in the sand somewhere, and it probably has to be drawn in a place that's slightly uncomfortable for you. Here's an idea, just an option. Maybe try it this week and see what happens. Pick tech-free hours every night during the weekdays at your house. It'd be like 5 to 7, 6 to 8. If you're like, we cannot do 2 hours, let's just do 5 to 6 or whatever. Pick tech-free time every night in your house and just see what that does to the way your family is relating to each other and to who your family starts becoming. My goal with my phone is to treat it like an old-school phone that was attached to the wall when I was growing up. When I get home, until my twins go to bed, I want to set it next to the wall on Ring so I can answer it if necessary, and just leave it there. And my public confession is that that is emotionally harder than it should be, because sometimes you're just like, I'm bored. I just want to look at cat videos, just real quick, just a couple, just like 3 or 4. But it's not actually hard to do. Just figure out some limit and try it. And then last but not least, in fact, it's last but most, because this is the most important one by such a wide margin that if you don't do this one, none of the rest of it is going to make that big of a difference. Carve out some space in your life and in your schedule and militantly commit to it. Refuse to be knocked off of it to connect with God. Find time to connect with the heart of God, because it's in connection with God that our minds are transformed by his beauty and by his grace. It's in that connection that we can begin to start thinking about things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, excellent, admirable, and praiseworthy. That's the stuff that changes the course and direction of our lives. And so I just want to encourage you, make it a priority to connect with Jesus. Put down the phone, put down the computer, and set aside time. And whether that's through prayer or reading the Bible or worship or taking a walk in nature or all of the above, it's in that connection that your life and your future will be changed. Like, technology's here. It's going nowhere. It's a tension to be managed, not a problem to be solved. But I think if we don't start being intentional about the way we manage it, it will continue to conform us to the patterns of this world, that means settling for a smaller story than the one God wants to write, and it will ultimately destroy our relationships with everyone around us. But if we're intentional about leveraging it in a way that creates, hopefully, more space and time for us to connect to the heart of God, what we'll find is the peace that passes all understanding that he wants to give us in the middle of an anxious world. Will you just pray with me? God, thank you. Thanks for being willing to connect with us. Thanks for all the ways technology makes our lives better. Thanks for family. Thank you for connection. Thank you for building us for each other. Lord, we come to you with a confession that all of us have kind of drifted in some areas and been less intentional than we should be, specifically with technology. That so often our minds are bombarded with things that send formation in the confirmation direction and not the transformation direction. And Lord, I pray for all of us that we'd stop settling for anything less than the life you said you dreamed us up and placed us here to live. That we'd stop settling for anything less than the story you want to write. And Lord, it's hard. Thank you for grace in the middle of it. Thank you for the grace that you extend to us and that we can extend to each other. But I pray that you'd help us intentionally fill our minds with these thoughts that move our lives in your direction, with things that are true, noble, pure, right, lovely, excellent, admirable, and praiseworthy, so that we can move from where we are to the place you have for us. We can move from the present we're existing in to the beautiful futures you've got out ahead of us. And we can be and become the kind of people in the middle of a frenetic, anxious, stressed out world that live with peace and point others toward it as well. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.